The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Somebody needs to remind you, people, the government does not pay for anything. It takes money from other people to pay for things. There is no free. Social Security is not free. Subsidized housing is not free. Healthcare is not free. Free is it has no cost. God, man. We have failed our children in basic economic education. It might be free to you. The rest of us are going to be paying for it. And some of us are not confused about that. We know where the money came from, out of our back pocket.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
I just love the rationality of Dave Ramsey. It's so true. It's not free, right? Big news today, and we'll be getting into it coming up in just a few moments. We'll be talking about the infrastructure bill and the human infrastructure bill that the Democrats are putting together. And you know, Maggie, who is new to my show team, and you used to hear me talk about Jake a lot. Maggie is the new producer on the program. She and Tom are the drivers behind what you hear here. Really, I mean, I owe her a debt of gratitude. A lot of the audio that you hear, Maggie's able to hunt down for me, and she worked with Dave Ramsey for quite a while. And she says, oh, you got to play a little bit of Ramsey today, especially in light of what we're seeing here. And Ramsey was railing against excessive government spending. Maggie, thanks for doing that. I mean,
you're welcome.
Dave is always, I think he's very rational in his thought.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have this thought that everything is free.
It's not. It comes from somewhere, and you got to have a budget.
It does.
You can't just spend money you don't have.
That's right. Yeah, I'm sorry, Patrick. Go ahead. What did you say? All right. So,
yeah.
Go ahead, Patrick. Very quickly.
I just wanted to say, no, that doesn't money come from trees, right?
No.
that's what
well,
people
yeah,
think,
paper
right?
comes from it, right?
Yeah.
It does. No. The bailout bill we'll talk about coming up in a few minutes and what it means. Nothing is free. Nothing is free. This morning, of course, the Senate passed, if you're just wondering what we're talking about here, a $1 trillion infrastructure package is going to add, billions of dollars to the national debt. And there's more debt looming. There's another $3.5 trillion bill that is in the wings right now. And I'll tell you about that coming up. But look, nothing's for free. I'm trying to think of that Margaret Thatcher quote. Maggie, maybe you could find it for me. She talked about spending other people's money. I mean, everybody thinks that the government has money to give out and that it's free, you know, but really it's not. It's got to come from somewhere. Social Security, health care, all the stuff that many people think the government just gives to you, it's got to be paid. It's got to come out of somebody's pocket, and that ultimately is yours, believe it or not. Let me share some other news with you, too, that just broke before the program today. Thank you, Patrick. Patrick just sent this quote. I was trying to remember what Margaret Thatcher had said. She said, the problem with socialism, right? A lot of people are arguing right now that where we are heading with all of this money, all this Green New Deal, all this let's pay for preschool and kindergarten and all the rest of this type of stuff and call it infrastructure. Let's hand out and spend more money. Let's get into trillions of dollars more worth of debt that your children and your grandchildren have to pay for. Maybe you'll say, look, this is a harbinger of socialism, you know, and it's problematic. And Thatcher once said, she said, the problem with socialism is that you eventually run out of other people's money, right? Communism and socialism are failed systems. You can go back across centuries. Take a look at it. They have never succeeded. Oh, well, what about the Netherlands? No, there are nuances and differences there. I know some people like to throw that out. Take a look at Venezuela. Take a look at Cuba. Take a look at the Soviet Union. Take a look at places where this has been enacted. The problem with socialism is that you eventually run out of other people's money. I don't want to go down that path in this country. I do not want to go down that lane. And I have great concerns. But look, we reap what we sow. You put certain the people into office, you know what the platform is, and when this happens, it may not be this year, may not be next year, but you're going to see the ramifications of it. You are seeing the effects of inflation already, and I don't think that's going away anytime soon. Some people are worried about the housing bubble right now. Some experts are calling it a bubble. We'll see. I mean, rates have risen unbelievably. Try buying a used car, and we talked a lot about this. I don't want to get into it right now, but we'll talk infrastructure coming up and what it means to you in just a couple minutes. But Andrew Cuomo, I don't know if you've been following this story or not at all. Patrick Alog, he's the great producer on the phones right now here for the show. And he stopped by my office. Did you hear the news? I said, no, what? He says, Andrew Cuomo, New York governor. He's been, you know, we talked a little bit about him yesterday, saying he's not going to leave. Didn't want to get out of office. He's, you know, innocent of the charges. The man who was celebrated by the media as being the nation's leader on COVID. People calling him to run for president of the United States. He's had to resign his office. And I knew that was coming. As legal action began to mount, as investigation into his actions continue to intensify, I thought, there's no way he's going to try to stay. He's going to resign. So effective 2 weeks from today, over sexual harassment complaints, he is resigning. New York Attorney General James conducted an extensive investigation into several complaints, and they found that Governor Cuomo had illegally harassed 11 women and that he created what was called a very toxic atmosphere for women to work in. But this also comes after revelations earlier that, you know, both he and his staff had doctored numbers to hide the actual number of COVID-19 people that had been transferred into nursing homes to recover. But then they infected residents of those homes. And check out this number. This is what struck me as I was reading this earlier today. 15,000 of them died. I mean, I would not want that kind of blood on my hands. I would not. And I'm not here to judge. I mean, we need to pray. When I hear these cases and these stories, I think there's a real flaw. There's a real woundedness in these people. Let's pray for them. When you hear this, instead of getting very angry, let's reciprocate with love. Let's not make excuses, but let's clearly pray for their conversion, the healing that they need. To doctor and hide numbers, you know, and then write a book. He wrote a book on all this, right? He's this great hero. He called out the president as a failure. People looked at him. He had these self-indulgent, you know, television opportunities every day where he spoke to people. People loved it. They couldn't get enough of it. 15,000 people died because he transferred people who were sick, recovering from COVID, into an area where there were compromised people. I think that's tragic. For some reason, the state legislature didn't think that was worth impeaching him over. Not a big deal, right? But they were considering impeaching him over sexual harassment complaints. I don't quite get that. I mean, I think both are impeachable offenses, but why is one more important? You know, interesting that the New Yorker reported that 7 years ago, the Justice Department had started an investigation into New York State's government corruption, and Cuomo called Valerie Jarrett, a very highly placed aide to then President Barack Obama, to get it canceled. And that's a sitting governor enabling and engaging, really, if you think about it, in obstruction of justice. But no one in the Obama administration said anything about that until now. So that's some breaking news for you. We'll see what happens in the days ahead. We know he's going to resign. I don't know who will be taking over. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot is also facing the ire of the police department after a police officer was killed over the weekend. I shared the story with you during the chaplet. If you missed it, there was a young, beautiful mother. Her name was Ella French. Just gave birth to a child. I think it was about 2 months prior. And she and her partner were conducting just a routine traffic stop when they were fired on. Shot at by the occupants of the car. A bullet went into her head, and she was mortally wounded. And her partner, fighting for his life, seriously wounded as well. Her colleagues held a vigil at the hospital where she was taken, and then the mayor showed up. You know what they did? The police officer stood up. And they turned their backs on her. They turned around. They turned their backs on Mayor Lightfoot. They blamed her for the political atmosphere that allowed criminals nearly free rein. And we're seeing this not just in Chicago. You're seeing it in liberal cities all around the country. I was watching a program last night. They showed the stats of these cities that want to defund the police. And what do you see? You see crime running rampant. You see police shootings. You see shootings in general. You see homicides on the rise. And I think it was either Seattle or it was Portland. I can't remember, but it was like a 342% increase. I mean, it was something bizarre. Was it Portland? Thank you, Maggie. It was Portland. Unbelievable, the numbers that you're seeing. And of course, again, there's a lack of common sense. Doesn't it make, look, you defund the police, you take them away, what's going to happen? You know, this is just the bad fruit of a bad decision. That's what this ultimately is. So, you know, again, the officers, in a very silent way, but very visible way, you know, telling Mayor Lightfoot what they think, you know, and hopefully maybe it would be a sobering call for her. One other story here, too, which I think is important to you. I think I saw a stat somewhere. I forget how many Americans, 41 million Americans, I think. I'm ballparking that figure somewhere in that range. Have student loan debt, you know, and if you're one of those people, or maybe it's your kids, I bet the number goes even higher. People who have student loans, you have been on a payment freeze ever since the pandemic started. And I think it's a good thing. It's an important thing. So repayment was supposed to start again next month. But President Biden's decided to put it off again until the end. Now get a load of this. This is good for you. The end of January 2022. You get a little more time to start paying down that debt. He's, of course, under pressure from the Senate Democrats, the Democrats in that party. It's the progressives, the liberals that want him to write off $50,000 worth of student debt. That's a lot of debt, right? That's a lot of debt. I think he'd be willing probably to go for $10,000. I heard him throw that number out before, but there's a push right now for 50 G's to be eradicated. And I'm sure if you have debt, you're like, yes, let's see him do that, right? I mean, who wouldn't want to have their debt taken away? House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, though, says, yeah, he can't do it without Congress's approval. So we'll see what happens there. Also, one final note here. Simone Biles, I had mentioned that, you know, she's a Catholic and she was, of course, the greatest of all time when it comes to gymnastics. I heard really sad news today. And I had Maggie, my producer, work on getting her on the air. We're going to try to reach out to her this week and get Simone on to talk about the Olympics and what she went through, and especially her Catholic faith. I respect her ability. You know, she's a world-renowned gymnast. She's been touting her Catholic faith. And I say bravo to you. You know, I'm delighted you're Catholic. You know, you're in the right faith. You're in the church that Christ established. She was telling people, you know, of carrying her rosary wherever she goes. And she seeks the intercession of Saint Sebastian, which I thought was cool. He's the, by the way, if you don't know, he's the patron of athletes. But a recent Twitter post shocked a lot of her followers. In fact, shocked me, to be honest. She came out and Maggie's saying it was Instagram too. She came out and said that she was pro-abortion. I don't understand that. She was adopted, wasn't she, Patrick? Yeah, she was adopted. And I would think that if you were adopted almost, you would think, gosh, my mother could have aborted me. You might want to tilt a little more towards the pro-life side of things. And again, I don't know what she's going through. I don't know her. I want to be compassionate. But clearly, she's missed something along the way here. She's Catholic. She calls upon the intercession of the saints. Her brother, from what I understand, was also sent to a foster home. And she, you know, and he ended up being arrested for murder. But she said this, and I'll just quote her. She says, look, it's not easy and coming from someone who's been in foster care system. Trust me, foster care system is broken and it's tough, especially on the kids and the young adults who age out. And adoption is expensive. I'm just saying, she says, you know, to have overcome a broken system as triumphantly as she has. Lila Rose says this, to wish death for other kids because they may face foster care is beyond fathoming. And it really is. You know, let's pray for Simone. I mentioned yesterday Britney Spears was Catholic. She came out and said she's Catholic. I think her mother and some of her sisters are. And she talked about going to Mass and praying. She talked about the Hail Mary. I understand that post was taken down. I saw a report the other day. So I don't know whether her handlers are saying, hey, we got to reel that in, or what the deal was. But you know, who knows? I think there is grace, there's healing that comes through the sacraments, especially as a Catholic, and I think it's so important.
Yeah,
so,
Drew, yeah. I just have to say, as a young woman, I want to speak to those out there listening who see this so often in society. There are so many young women that are so well-formed in their faith, and yet when it comes to this issue of abortion, yeah. They fall silent, and it's a seductive narrative in society today. And we really, really have to focus on life.
Yeah, that's well said, Maggie. Thank you. Hey, this morning, and I want to get back to another issue as well. And you're more than welcome to join me here anytime. 888-914-9149. The Senate, as I said, passed a $1 trillion infrastructure package that will add about $256 billion to the national debt. Now, the bill passed on a 69-30 vote. 19 Republicans joined with their fellow Democrats in approving it. And guess who was in the mix? Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. Yeah, he was there. So the bill's supposed to take care of things like roads and bridges and waterways and internet and broadband. And to me, that's infrastructure, right? That's infrastructure. Let's get our roads and our bridges fixed, our waterways. Let's get broadband or fiber optics out there. But there are reports that a whole lot of other things have been packed into this as well. Tied to this is another massive $3.5 trillion bill that will pay for things like free community college and paid family and medical leave and expanded medical care and preschool and amnesty for illegal immigrants and extending the child tax credit and increased taxes on businesses and the wealthy. And it also includes efforts to mitigate climate change. And that's all part of this $3.5 trillion bailout, which some opponents have called the first step towards the new Green Deal. But the bill will be passed. It will be passed by straight party line vote through what's called the reconciliation process. And that's something, as I said a little bit earlier, is going to cost not just you, but your children and your grandchildren. It's going to cost for a long time. It's going to send our country in a really deficit direction. But with all the spending packages adding up, what happens to the debt ceiling? That's a big question, right? Democrats want to pass the budget resolution this week after the Senate wraps up their work on that $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill. Here's a brief overview from the Hill of what's going on.
Senate Democrats on Monday unveiled a budget blueprint that paves the way for a massive spending plan they want to pass without GOP support later this year. The budget resolution, which includes instructions on how to draft the $3.5 trillion bill, does not include an increase to the debt ceiling. Democrats can pass the budget resolution and the spending plan on their own if all 50 of their members stay unified under a process known as reconciliation. Republicans, bristling at the spending package, have warned that they won't put up the 10 GOP votes needed to raise the debt ceiling outside of the budget process.
So if both of these bills go through, we're going to be adding more to our national debt, with some estimates going as high as about $30 trillion. I'm joined right now by Joel Griffith. He's currently a research fellow for the Institute of Economic Freedom and Opportunity at the Heritage Foundation. You can learn more at the Heritage Foundation. They do great work there. It's heritage.org if you want to read up on this. Joel, thanks for your time today. Good afternoon.
Hey, thanks for having me this afternoon.
Yeah, I'm delighted to talk with you about this. Big news, costly news. What kinds of other things, other than the first infrastructure package, are we going to see? What kind of other things are in, I should say, the other infrastructure package that we're going to see? I have no problem, as I said, roads, bridges, and internet. That's great. What else is packed into that?
Well, even in this first package, there's a whole lot else packed into it. This is a 2,000-page bill. I mean, we were unpacking it over the weekend. I doubt many senators have even read the whole thing through. But even in this first package that gained so much Republican support, there's a lot to be concerned with. There's a new climate activism wing within the Department of Transportation that'll force every state that's getting state infrastructure dollars to come up with a carbon emissions reduction plan. There's just enormous amounts of corporate welfare to the green energy sector in this initial package. And there's also quite a bit of social justice activism in here as well, even in the broadband sector. I know you mentioned that a second ago, yep. And I think all of us enjoy having high-speed broadband, but this will basically have a much bigger government role in that, including, here's an important item, making sure that prisoners have access to high-speed internet. So there is a lot within this initial package that is very problematic, in addition to all the deficit spending. And I would say, too, look at the infrastructure component. There's just as much money going to these failed mass transit programs in these urban areas that continue to elect representatives and city council members that can't manage a budget. There's just as much money going to those failing systems as there is towards freeways.
Wow.
So there's a lot in this initial program, but as you mentioned, the follow-up is even worse. The follow-up includes implementing big parts of the Green New Deal, includes amnesty for millions of people here illegally, and a big expansion of the welfare state, including further nationalization of the healthcare system.
Yeah, so help me understand this, and I agree. I think that phase two of this thing is going to really expand the welfare state in this country. I don't think that's a good thing. Why did Mitch McConnell and so many other Republicans go along with this? I mean, what was the mindset behind it?
Well, like any of these bills that, you know, are touted as bipartisan, well, when you hear that, it's not something we should applaud automatically. Some of the worst things that have happened in this country financially have been bipartisan. And that's because politicians, whether Democrat or Republican, often love to be able to point to specific things they have been able to construct in their district, because they know people are going to pay attention to that and applaud that. And it's harder for us to understand the enormity of how that plays out when it's multiplied across the entire country. And sure, you might like that bridge or that bridge with your name on it that gets constructed in your district, but you're talking about generational debt here. We're $30 trillion in debt. We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars per family. And even if you don't see your tax bill increased as a result, the net result is slower economic growth, because it means the government is gobbling up more of our resources.
Yeah, I heard Chuck Schumer the other day, you know, somebody must have asked him, you know, how are we going to pay for this, right? And he goes, the wealthy are going to pay their fair share. That's kind of the mantra that he's putting out. We're going to raise our national debt level by $250 billion. I sit back and take a deep breath on that, and I'm thinking, does anyone in Congress care about how much debt we're accumulating? Is this just a very myopic view? Are we very short-sighted here, is anyone looking down the road at what this means for the future of this country?
Well, a lot of politicians are catching on to the fact that they can easily hide the impact of all of the borrowing and spending by simply having the Federal Reserve print the money, buy the debt, and have the government spend the debt. And most people are still not connecting the dots between that rampant money printing and the borrowing and slower economic growth combined with long-term inflation impact. And we're getting a taste of inflation right now, only some of which is related to all this crazy spending. But over the longer term, there is no doubt that there will be upward inflationary pressures if we do not get this under control, because as you flood the marketplace with dollars, ultimately it makes each and every dollar in your pocket worth less, and your income is going to have a hard time keeping up with it. That is a hidden tax. There's no way the wealthy alone can pay for all this spending.
I'm with you. Hey, Joel, I have a few minutes. The debt ceiling, I want to talk about that too. Explain that to those who don't know. And why is that so important in this second bill? I mean, the thought of raising that to me is terrifying.
Well, it takes Congress to give the authority to actually borrow more money. The Treasury Department cannot just simply borrow money of their own volition. But what's a lot of political theater here are the same politicians that will make a show, some of them, I should say, not all, thankfully, there's some authentic ones, but many of the ones that will make a big show about standing up and delaying the increase in the debt ceiling are the same ones who just today voted for another $1 trillion of deficit spending, and a lot of them are the same ones that voted over the past year and a half for trillions of additional spending in the name of COVID relief for a problem that was largely caused by state and local governments criminalizing economic activity and social and societal involvement.
Unbelievable. Hey, Joel, thank you for being with me today. I'm sure we'll talk again. This is not going
Thanks
away. I look forward to catching up with you again. But I know Heritage is doing a lot of writing on this. People can get plugged in at heritage.org, right? The best place to go?
Yes, sir. Heritage.org, or go to Twitter at Joel Griffith or at Heritage.
You got it. Check him out on Twitter as well, at Joel Griffith. I am Drew Mariani. I'm going to take a short break. I am going to be back on the other side. Wait till you hear what's now being targeted to your children. I just came across this. I'll share it with you on the other side.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
All the news and issues now that are happening now.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Great to be with you today. Thanks for joining me. Check out this story. It's something, you know, I get tired of talking about, but I do think it is a real problem. And I think we're going to see, as I talk about the bad fruit of bad decisions, I think we're going to see the bad fruit of the peddling of porn to kids. And I hate to, as I said, I do not like to talk about what I'm about to share with you. But I think it's important that you know. I don't know if you know the name Flora Gill. Does that ring a bell with you? Probably not, right? It's not a household name. That was a trick question. She's actually a fashion journalist who's been published in GQ and the Sunday Times, Style Magazine, and Grazia. These days, it's pretty easy to get more attention from the world if you say something stupid on social media, right? You get a lot of attention for that. But in Gil's case, let me share with you what she wrote, okay? She wrote this on Twitter. She said, quote, "Someone needs to create porn for children." Yeah, your heads are snake. Yeah. "Someone needs to create porn for children." Now, hear me out, she says. Young teens are already watching porn, but they're finding it hardcore. You know, aggressive videos give a terrible view of sex. They need entry-level porn. Yeah, I know. A softcore site where everyone asks for consent and no one gets choked. So that's her end of quote, okay? And I maybe I should put out a disclaimer here. If you got kids, maybe you should dial back on this. I probably should have done that before I started talking about this. But this fashion journalist is writing, and she's not alone. It's a mindset amongst a lot of people. It didn't go over well, by the way, as you would expect. And she had to come back. She made clarifications, including saying, you know, she wasn't talking, you know, about 14. She was saying she was talking about 14, 15, and 16-year-olds and not little kids, right? So eventually the whole thing was deleted. So, you know, normally, I, as I said, I wouldn't mention this, but Gil isn't alone. And this is why I'm telling you this, okay? If it was one case, I would say, okay, she's a wackadoodle, right? Who cares, right? There are others. And again, look, I'm here just to pull back the veil for you. I'm here to get you plugged in to what's happening in the culture that you may not be aware of, what threatens your children, you know, what is real, what is rising. You know, there was a world-renowned clinical psychologist by the name of Dr. Jordan Peterson. I know you probably know the name. Love Dr. Peterson. Brilliant, right? And he actually talked about the effects of porn and what it does. And I know you know, all, we've talked about the effects of it, but he talks about how it stunts character development, okay? It stunts character development. I've heard about how it changes views of women and, you know, creates sexual aggressive behavior. I mean, a whole litany of things. You know what happens to it and how it is, you know, desensitizing, if you will, that once what was once titillating is no longer so. And I've had forensic detectives on the program who talk about the slippery slope of pornography when they go through people who've been arrested for sexual crimes and all sorts of stuff. But what Dr. Peterson was saying, he says it not just stunts character development by giving you access to something that in the real world takes a lot of sacrifice and transformation to obtain. Listen to what he says here.
I think it's dangerous because of that, because it offers immediate gratification, but no, well, that's it. It offers immediate gratification, but no medium to long-term development of character or life. I guess that's it. And that seems to be a dangerous kind of trap. If you engage in a behavior and then it's followed by a burst of pleasure, that behavior is going to be powerfully reinforced, and the circuitry that drives you to that behavior is going to become dominant, because behavior that culminates in a reward tends to become stronger. And that includes attitudes and ideas and thoughts and impulses.
So that's Dr. Peterson, of course. We've talked many times about the deleterious, the negative effects of pornography on not just adult men, but the younger you're exposed to it, the more damaging it becomes. In fact, I've had several people on this program who've lost relationships, who've lost businesses, even the brain science behind this. It's a whole nother conversation, but I want to make you aware of what's happening with Gil. As I said, she's not alone, because there are others who are pushing for kids to become addicted to porn. I know that sounds maybe hard to believe, but there are actually people who that's their end goal, right? I mean, this is evil at the base, at the core. They want kids to become addicted to porn. Vice.com spoke with a psychologist about what parents should say if their young child happens to see Cardi B's video with Megan Thee Stallion called WAP. And I won't even go into what that stands for. I'm almost hesitant about even talking about this on the air today because of the nature of this, you know? You know what I mean? But you're adults, and I gave you the warning. I just want you to be aware of what's going on. And I can't, as I say on the air what that means. My producer was talking with me about this morning, and I actually had to look it up. And I'm thinking, man, the psychologist said the parents should just calmly explain if your kids come to you because they hear something in these music videos or on some TV show or something on the internet, what it means to children. And their claim, of course, is that they're just getting kids to be open, right? These are kids. You got to, you know, get them open to the reality. They're going to be exposed to this one day. But the reality is that kids are exposed to porn almost invariably. They are affected by it. It changes your brain. It does. And many of the kids become addicted. And look, if you have somebody in your family who's addicted to drugs, somebody who's addicted to alcohol, to sexual, you know how destructive addiction is. You know how deep the hooks of addiction can go. And you have to do everything you can to protect your children from it. So I have invited back to the program Sean Clifford. He is the CEO of a company called Canopy. You can find them out. You can go online, check out this resource. It's called Canopy. It's .us, not .com. It's canopy.us. And he founded this company just, you know, literally a couple months ago, back in 2019, to help build a world of healthy tech users. And he did it to start protecting children from pornography. And look, kids have cell phones today, right? They're in the playground. A friend of mine was sharing with me when her kid was in fourth grade. She was scared to death. He had a cell phone. One of his buddies said, come over here, check this out. He was able to access an image he should never see. And gentlemen, if you've ever seen pornography, you probably remember your first image, right? And what age you were or where you were. I mean, it leaves an indelible mark. So here to answer your questions and to give us more insight into really what is a threat to your children and how you can best protect them. Once again, to Sean Clifford. Sean, thanks for being back. It's good to have you back, I should say. Thanks for being with me.
Drew, we appreciate the opportunity to speak.
I hope I'm not overemphasizing or being too dramatic here. Maybe before we get into anything else, pornography in general, what's it do to the mind, to the psyche? I know a lot of serial killers often were exposed to pornography before it led them down that path. And not everybody that views pornography is going to become a serial killer. I, of course, want to say that. But there is a slippery slope. And certain people have certain, you know, character makeups and flaws. But and Ted Bundy was one of those classic examples of who, in an interview years later when he was in prison, said, hey, pornography really led him here. What would it do to a person who's exposed to it? And is there a difference at the age in which one is exposed?
Great question. Yes, pornography is formative. It shapes you. It shapes your imagination, your understanding about relationships, pleasure, intimacy, a whole host of things. And I think, that's why you can actually go back to Plato and find him speaking about the challenge of the issue. And we've known for a long time, this is not a new question, that it is very powerful. And one of the things we've discovered in recent years, thanks in part to advances in neuroscience, is that we actually can look in the brain and see how it's shaping us. So things that we've speculated for a long time have now been substantiated by mountains of research along the lines of what we've always suspected. This is something that is very powerful. It's tied to one of the strongest innate drives within us, yep. And it has the potential to warp it in a very problematic direction. Now, you asked at the age of exposure. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, what is the average age of exposure, and does it make a difference when you're exposed?
It absolutely does. So in America today, the majority of our children will be exposed to hardcore pornography before they enter middle school. So that's somewhere between ages of 8 and 12 years old. And the age of exposure does matter because as your brain is developing, certain things can be more formative. And as you said, there are indelible images. And as Peterson alluded in that great clip you shared, things that produce a reward oftentimes can become dominant in the brain. So those that are exposed to this type of content early can have a much greater effect than those that are exposed when they're older, their brain's already developed.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. I'm sitting here kind of stunned by the age because I remember when I first started reporting on this, I think the number was like 15 and then it was 14. And then I had seen reports that they're 8 to 12 years of age. That's frightening. I mean, that really, and to the comment that was made a little bit earlier in that particular tweet that went out, yeah, a lot of kids who see porn has become very, very dark and very deviant in a lot of particular ways. You know, and to have a kid be exposed to something that's on one end of the spectrum, That has really got to be something that could twist and forever redirect a man or a woman's sexual appetite in the future. And I just wonder what that does to the future of marriage and to relationships and to dating and just the way a man looks at a woman in general. It's kind of frightening. What are we seeing right now? I know the age of computers and cell phones is relatively new. Are we seeing the bad fruit of this exposure already? What kind of studies have been done?
Lots of studies have been done, although I will note that it's becoming increasingly hard to do it because identifying a control group that hasn't been exposed is the big challenge now. Yep. So regrettably, things have gone pretty far down that road. What we're finding is this. The brain is hardwired to seek out novelty, especially in this domain. Mm-hmm. And that's why some of the content that's out there becomes increasingly problematic or dark, because you're ever on a quest to get that same reward, and you have to consume content that is more novel and different. Huh. And so that kind of shapes what your longings are and your sexual appetites. And you can see over a period of years how what starts off as something normal can quickly move in a very problematic direction.
Wow. This fashion journalist, wants kids to be exposed to something a little less, graphic maybe. There's no such thing as good porn, is there? I mean, it's kind of a misnomer, isn't it, for her to say that?
Yeah, there's a movement out there that calls for ethical porn as if the only issue is one of consent. And I think that there's a lot of problems associated with pornography, and addressing one doesn't really solve the other issues out there. This is addictive in its form. Yeah. And Drew, just the one thing I'll quickly note, just to kind of put this in context, lest people think this is an errant tweet from kind of someone who's out there. 3 years ago, New York Times ran a feature-length piece that was called What Teenagers Are Learning from Online Porn. And it says it's prevalent, it's everywhere, and it ends in the subheader with this question. Can they be taught to see it more critically? And the assumption there is that it's futile, right? It's inevitable that your kids are going to be exposed. Yeah. And that, I think, is... that's the New York Times, but people are, if you adopt the view that it is inevitable and it's futile, some people are starting to ask, well, how do we then make sure they only see the good stuff? And to your exact question, I think that underneath that is this assumption that there could be something good, and I would vociferously challenge that.
Yeah, you use the words ethical porn. I mean, what an oxymoron that is, right? I remember Scott Hahn, great convert to the Catholic faith and author. He once said that sin gets bored with itself, so it's always seeking more. And the same thing is reflective in pornography, as you point out, that you need greater stimuli, something more novel or a little different in order to get the same, pleasure reward. Let me ask you, what can be done? I know you've got something underway right now. I want to hear about that. In terms of public health, because I think this is an issue of public health, and I think we're going to see the ramification of this for decades to come. Who knows how much longer? There's a lot of dysfunction out there right now. There's a lot of damage being done. Should the government be cracking down on the purveyors of porn? What's being done in terms of a national approach to this? Is there a sensitivity to it, or most people think it's not that bad? It's not that big of a deal. It's what happens in the bedroom happens in the bedroom. So what's the mindset from the government right now, and what are they doing to attack this? And then maybe on the other side of that as well, as I know you have an effort underway, what can we do individually and how can we help to protect our kids?
Absolutely. The mindset right now is one that I think kind of adopts the position that pornography is Playboy. And that's what they think of when they think of the pornography crisis. And I'm not going to condone Playboy, right? I think that's problematic itself, but what is out there today is tame by comparison. So I do think that there's a lot of education that needs to be done to really educate policy leaders, cultural gatekeepers as to what's actually going on out there. The good news on this domain is that a lot more voices are joining saying, hey, hold up, guys, this is really problematic. Whether it's neuroscientists, whether it's the Johns Hopkins, Harvard, public health officials, post-Me Too feminists, or a lot of parents that are now contending with the reality of what this is doing to our children, who are saying, stop, enough. We've got to change our broader cultural and policy stance on this issue. So it's slow, right? And, look, and a lot of people also are caught up in this. It's an addicting experience. And so there's a lot of shame around it. So it remains difficult to talk about. But the more you probe, the more you dig, I think more people realize this is a problem that has to be addressed.
You're not kidding. Well, Sean, I only have a minute or two left here. If people want to get plugged into Canopy, what's the best way to do that, and what are you offering?
I appreciate that. Canopy is software that you would download to your child's device, smartphone, tablet, or computer, and we effectively can scan all internet traffic in real time, identify if any of it is pornographic, and then just block the whole page or just remove the bad images and videos.
Wow.
So we really want to deliver families a porn-free internet experience. We're very excited about this. Wow. We think this is a critical step. It's not a silver bullet. Nothing will replace the hard work of parenting. You have to prepare your kids on this on many fronts. But this is an important start in the battle to ensure that your kids have an opportunity to form healthy relationships.
Well,
I think that's what we're fighting for.
So stay with me for a second. I want to talk more about this offer. I think it's fascinating. I've never heard of anything like it. And I'll tell you what, I only have Sean for a few minutes. So if you want to join in, if you got a question, a comment, a concern, maybe your kids have had access to it, you don't know how to protect them, feel free to call in right now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. I'll take a couple calls. As I said, I only have Sean Clifford for a few moments here. But when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about Canopy. I think it could be an answer to a problem maybe you're facing within your relationship, maybe that you have with your children. Look, I had three sons in high school and two daughters. My kids are all about a year apart. Software like that is excellent for kids. You can, instead of having to take the computers away from them, right? You can make sure they're safeguarded. But we'll talk more about how it operates and get you plugged in. I'll take a call or two for you from you as well. 888-914-9149. We're back right after this.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
All things current. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, it's good to be back with you today. Thanks for joining me. Look, I'm here to help give you some protection, maybe for your kids. You know, as parents, we are the primary educators of our children, responsible to keep them safe and make sure they're well-formed adults. And I learned today that the average exposure to your kid with pornography is between the ages of 8 and 12 years of age. I mean, just think about that. You're 6 years old when you go in the first grade, right? I mean, that's sinful. That's actually evil. I mean, it's horrible, right? So what can you do? What can you do? What can you do? Your kids are going to thank you later, believe me, but you can give them the freedom to explore the online world without fear. There is a website that we just discovered. It's called Canopy, and their web address is canopy.us. It can block porn across the web. It doesn't block safe content. You know, it filters out those pornographic images. It can prevent sexting. It doesn't take long to set up, and it's a little bit different than some other softwares that are out there. And I'm joined today by Sean Clifford. This is revolutionary. And it might be a solution. Maybe, ladies, your spouse or your husband or your boyfriend, whoever it is, might have a real problem. And you caught him, and you want some accountability. You know, maybe this is a solution. You know, I know there's a lot of different accountability software out there. There's a lot of filtering software out there, but this is a little bit different. Sean, I want to go to Hope in Modesto, California. Before I do, though, to your software, this is different than anything else that I've ever seen out there before, because this does the work for you, right? And it works across all sorts of platforms. It's seamlessly across smartphones and tablets and computers and Apple and Android. Doesn't matter, right? You've got it to work across anybody's device.
Yes, we've been working long and hard to try and make this as seamless and easy for families, because we know technology can be overwhelming. It's always changing. And we really want to be a tool that parents can use in the online world, just like you would take steps offline to make sure your kids are safe. So that's the goal. We're very excited to be in the American market at long last, and hope folks will give us a chance.
All right, well, check it out. It's canopy.us. Let me grab a quick phone call. Hope is listening in Modesto, California, and her son was exposed, I think, at a very early age. Hi, Hope. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hey.
I was, I'm going to keep it as brief as I can. I was cleaning out my room. My son's room was in the sixth grade. And underneath the clothing, I found this horrible, horrible stuff, these books of nasty books, magazines. Mm-hmm. And so I grabbed those and I grabbed him and I went straight to the principal at the school. It turned out that one of his classmates, his father, had those. So he grabbed them and gave them to my son.
Wow.
And there was nothing I could do. It was too late. He was already exposed to all that ugliness. And even now, and he's already in his 40s.
Wow.
He watches that stuff online, horrible stuff.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. Pray for him. There are some great resources out there. You might want to get him plugged into an organization called Reclaim Sexual Health. I know the founders of that as well, and they have been on this program in the past. And there's a whole brain science behind pornography and the damage that it does. But there is help. There is healing. There is recovery from it. So check that out if you get a chance, okay? I want to go back to you, Sean, if I could quickly. And again, just get some final thoughts. Cause I have about a moment left here for you. A lot of parents might say, my kids have been exposed to it. It's not too late. I mean, we can filter this stuff. And with distance, I think also comes some healing. If you're constantly exposed to this stuff, it only becomes, I think, more addictive. But get some of your final thoughts here again from me, if you could.
Absolutely. Two pieces of advice I always offer to parents. Number one, protect your kids. What they consume matters. It shapes them in very powerful ways, and you have the opportunity to ensure that the content they consume that will shape them is the right kind of content. So protect them, put a filter on their phone, make sure that they're bringing in the good. The second thing I would say is to prepare them. We regrettably live in a world that is hypersexualized. This stuff is everywhere, and you need to equip your kid to navigate this world. I hate to say it, most kids will be exposed, and when that happens, they need to know that they can come to you to have an honest conversation.
Yeah.
I know that's hard. We don't often want to talk about this, but what you say does matter, and I think you've got a chance here to be the hero, right? May not feel like it in the moment, but as you said earlier, Drew, your kids will thank you.
They will.
And the last just thing I would say is, in explaining why, anytime you try and protect your kid from something, I think the why question will come. And on this one, it's important to articulate that you're not trying to block your kid from getting everything that they need to really flourish in life.
Yeah.
You're trying to make sure that they have that space to love the right things. And this is so important. And if you do that, gosh, they'll thank you later.
You got it. Hey, Sean, thank you for what you're doing. Keep up your good work. Keep us abreast of all that's unfolding, okay? And
will do. Thanks
we'll
so
talk
much,
soon. That's Sean Clifford. And check out canopy.us. That's canopy.us. You can get plugged in to that resource. I think there's a 30-day free trial, too, if you want to check it. I'm not getting compensated for this. Neither is relevant. I just think it's a great service for you. So, you can filter this material from your kids or for the household. Or maybe you got a rental property. Maybe you got something else where you're providing the internet service. Might be kind of a good way of doing that. You know, true story, I had a friend. And to our last caller there, who was upset about her 40-year-old son who was exposed to pornography. And I'm going to keep his name private. He's a good friend of mine. I know this guy for years. And a lot of respect for him. He comes from a beautiful family. And he got addicted to pornography. The pornography led him to strip clubs. And he had his own business. And he was paying these strippers so much money. I mean, he was making it rain. You know what I mean? It was crazy. And next thing you know, his business was compromised. And then his marriage became compromised. And then he found himself looking in other people's windows. He became a voyeur. And voyeurism, is often a step before, other types of behavior. He got arrested. He actually, I think, had to go to jail for a short time. But he came out, and I know him today. I see him. Great guy. He's found healing. He has found healing. So there's hope out there. This guy was on a bad trajectory. It's not his fault. It's like a drug. You know, just like somebody who's doing drugs or, seeking the next high. It's the same thing. So my heart went out to him. I prayed with him, was with him in some of these difficult times. And today, holds down a great job. He's in a great relationship. A beautiful guy. I love him very much. So there's hope out there. If you have somebody you're concerned about, just continue to pray for them. Another great resources. Reclaim Sexual Health is a great one that's out there. But I want to speak to you if you're dabbling in this. You're thinking, come on, Drew. I pulled down my job. I've got my marriage, my wedding. I'm fine. I'm a good man. I'm a good woman. Just a little entertainment, just to spice things up, right? You got to be careful because Satan is a legalist. You open this portal a lot of these websites, I spoke to an exorcist on a trip I was just on. He says he can't tell you how many exorcisms he's been involved with. And the exorcism, he says the result of it, you know, the spirit came in through pornography. Matthew 5:8 says, blessed are the pure of heart, for they shall see God, right? And purity, St. John Bosco said, is the queen of all virtues. It's an angelic virtue. If you're struggling in this area, confession is your answer. I really want to say to you, if you are Catholic, you are so blessed. You know, if you are Catholic, you have the sacrament. Okay, you're going to meet Christ in that sacrament of mercy. Okay, and there you'll find freedom. You'll find those demonic spirits vanquished. You will. I've got to take a break. I don't have time to tell you the story on this side. And I wasn't going to tell you this because I wanted to share some other stuff before the chaplet. Let me share with you when I come back. We're going to pray the chaplet coming up, and we'll pray for this type of healing. I'll share a story with you that this exorcist told me, and it dealt with impurity, okay? It dealt with fornication. It dealt with pornography. It dealt with cohabitation. So if you know somebody who's engaged in that stuff, you may want to listen to this. Came from an exorcist. It was an eye-opener for me, okay? So we'll come back. We'll pray the chaplet. If you want to pray with me, great time to get in. Here's the number for you. It's 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. I always take the first five, at least, maybe six calls. So, if you need some prayer, give me a ring.